Last week on the podcast, we interviewed Robert Kiyosaki, famous for writing Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And wow, what a reaction to that episode that we had. So many of you messaging us with your thoughts, opinions, praise, criticism, and everything in between. So we absolutely have to do an episode to cover off what we thought of that attention-grabbing interview.
Welcome to the Property Podcast, where every Thursday, property investors come to be informed and inspired. Yesterday, we are sharing our reactions to that Robert Kiyosaki interview that everyone has been talking about for the last week. And spoiler, we definitely don't agree with all of it. And if you get to the end of that and believe that currency still has any value, then we've got a tool for you in Hub Extra that gives you an easy way to save some money.
It's time for our new story of the week, and it seems like the property market is really heating up. And this has been backed by numbers now. We said the data would take a little bit of time to come through a few weeks back to demonstrate this, but Rightmove has recently released numbers showing how quickly it takes for a property to be sold. And the number of homes selling within a week has hit a 10-year high. That's quite a stat, Rob.
It is. So one in seven properties are now having a sale agreed within 1 week of being listed, and that is up from one in 10 a year ago. So that's quite a jump. The really amazing stat is when you look at the first 2 weeks, just under a third of homes had a sale agreed within the first 2 weeks, and that's up from 21% last year. So that's a significant proportion, a third of sellers getting their home onto the market and then off again within a fortnight. And given the current circumstances, Rob, not surprising that it's the bigger houses that have been the main beneficiaries of this.
Yeah, people obviously looking for space. What's interesting, though, is not all areas are created equal, as we all know, and the market in Scotland is actually the most buoyant, where within the first week, people in Scotland are seeing a third of properties being sold. So the UK average is 2 weeks for a third, but in Scotland, it's only 1 week. That's a very hot market. The slowest, no prizes, if you guess this, it's London, where one in nine homes were sold within the first week. Although it is fair to say that that is still up from one in 20 from a year ago. So quite a jump in percentage terms. So although the London market is the slowest right now, it's still doing a lot better than it was 12 months ago. So while some areas are doing better than others, it seems all areas have been doing better this year compared to last. So there's going to be a lot more data coming through over the coming weeks and months, which will actually show us what the sold prices were. Is it just more activity or is it a rise in house prices? We will see. Wouldn't be surprised, though, to see house prices ticking up slightly with so much activity and so much demand. But we'll wait for the data and, of course, we'll report on it when it comes out.
Last week on the podcast, we had Robert Kiyosaki on the show, author of the legendary book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. It's been an inspiration for tens of thousands of property investors, us included. So if you haven't listened to that episode yet, strongly recommend you go back and do that now, especially because some of the things that Robert was saying have caused quite a stir in the Property Hub community. There's been more reaction to this episode on social media than probably any other that we've done. And there's quite a thread developing about it inside the Property Hub forum as well. So this is an episode that everyone is talking about, and we're no different. We want to talk about it as well. I wasn't there at the time for the interview, so Rob and I didn't have a chance to talk about it straight afterwards, and we're going to do it now instead.
So like Rob said, his book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, is legendary, and it's an incredible book. And we absolutely want to make it clear right from the off, that book has helped so many people. And like Rob said, ourselves included, it's an incredible book. And what we love about that book is the emphasis on financial education and how important it is, and also how it's lacking in schools. Unfortunately, Rob, even today, he wrote that book 25 years ago, the issue is still present. There isn't enough financial education in, well, society, never mind schools, but society as a whole. And he wrote that book 25 years ago. So the fact that it's still relevant today is actually a bit of a shame, because you'd like to think the book would be redundant because we'd all woken up to the fact that we need to be educated about money and about finance and about how the world works. And that would help everyone understand what's going on and put everyone in a better position. But it's not happened.
No, with his book, he's done an immense amount of good for a lot of people. I know so many people who had Rich Dad, Poor Dad as their financial awakening. If they hadn't been lucky enough to stumble upon that book, the trajectory of their life would have been very, very different. And I think the argument he makes for entrepreneurship in the book is so powerful as well. And he did it in the interview as well. He was saying how at school and in academia, it's frowned upon to get things wrong. You're always told that you have to find the right answer. But in fact, what's far more valuable is getting out into the real world and trying stuff and getting the answer wrong and failing and learning from that. When we've talked about that so much in the past. And I think it's a really powerful message that comes through in his book.
But the reason why so many people have responded to last week's episode is not his points on financial education. Robert has a lot of views about the world today and the current market and where it's going. And those views are the ones that we really need to address, and many of you have asked us to address. So in this episode, we're going to tackle some of the things that Robert said and give our points of view. And you could decide whether you want to listen to his, ours, or make your own. That's absolutely fine. At the very least, we want to talk about it, so we're going to really enjoy this episode. So we're going to play back some of the key moments from last week's interview and have a little bit of a chat about what we think and what our views are. So one of the points that Robert made on more than one occasion was that people's jobs are going to be replaced by technology. So let's go back and listen to what he said.
The banking is going to collapse. Technology is going to replace bankers. You know, just as Amazon replaced retailers, technology is going to replace bankers. Just yesterday, they announced, or 2 days ago, they announced that a driverless truck will hit the roads in 2021. So that means 3 million lorry drivers are out of work. And then Zoom will replace school teachers. Because why do you have to go to school when you got YouTube and you got Zoom? So unemployment is going to go through the roof. So all the high paying jobs, the other people that are going to lose their jobs are many medical doctors, because much of medicine is just, you know, analyzing data. So today, like, you know, radiologists, you don't need a radiologist, you need a computer. It can do a better job faster and cheaper.
So this view isn't unique to Robert. This is something you hear a lot of, and understandably so. You can see technology replacing jobs now, and that technology is just getting better and better all the time. And I agree with some of what he's saying here, but far from all of it. So driverless trucks hitting the road next year means 3 million lorry drivers will be out of work. Well, for a start, they won't all be at once, as soon as that one product hits the market. But even if they all are in the end, then more jobs will always be created. People were saying when the Industrial Revolution was gathering steam that now there wouldn't be enough jobs to go around because you had automation and things were produced so much faster. When the car was invented, what were all the people who shod the horses going to do? So while there is a human cost to that, so those 3 million lorry drivers as individuals, a lot of them probably aren't going to be able to retrain as computer programmers or whatever to benefit from the new jobs. There's a lot of human cost at an individual level when these changes happen. But historically, when you look at the world as a whole, there's never been an innovation, and look at everything that's happened over the last 100-150 years that has resulted in fewer jobs being available in total. And some of the examples he gave, Rob, seem a bit bizarre. School teachers being replaced by YouTube, for example.
You set me up to comment on the silliest one. That's just nuts. Zoom and YouTube is going to replace school teachers. I don't even know where to start with that one. It's like, well, who's going to be on the other end of Zoom? You still need someone teaching you. I don't even want to try and defend or explain that one for him. It just makes absolutely no sense. At least the driverless truck point, you can see it happening, not as dramatically as he's laid out, but you could still see it happening. But this one, I've got nothing.
Another example he gave was medical doctors. We're not going to need doctors now, or not as many of them, because of technology. And I do think it's important to recognise that it's not just the more manual jobs that are going to be affected by technology. It is going to affect more kind of administrative, cognitive, whatever kind of work as well. But when you look at what's happened in the past with technology, it's not replaced high-level jobs. It's allowed those professionals to do their jobs more effectively. So when spreadsheet software like Excel was invented, were all the bookkeepers and accountants put out of work? No, there are just as many of them as there were before. Even though they're now not spending their time writing every transaction in pencil on a giant sheet of paper, that menial bit of the job is being done for them. So they can instead spend their time analysing that data and offering advice and insight and operating at a higher level because of the technology, not being replaced by it. And I think that's what we'll see in medicine and other areas as well.
Completely agree, Rob. And the final one we need to address for that segment is the banking jobs being replaced because there's going to be a banking collapse. Now, we'll talk about that later on in the episode because we asked him when he thinks it's going to happen. But unless he means a banking collapse means every single bank in the world no longer exists, then of course you're going to have bankers. You're going to have people working in the banks and the financial system. It's hard to know exactly what he meant by this point. If he means that fintech will develop and companies like Monzo and others, those challenger banks will come through and overtake the existing banking system. Well, I suppose you could make an argument for that. I can't see them all being replaced totally. But even if they were, there are still jobs within those companies. So I'm not sure where he was going with that. Unless he means that every bank in the world will no longer exist, then okay, there'll be no banking jobs. But I really can't bring myself to believe that that's what he means. I don't think he's that dramatic. So as you're about to hear, he goes on to talk about gold. But if, without a banking system of some sort, you can't trade gold. So we'll leave it open to you to decide what he actually meant by that. We still don't know. But he did talk about gold quite a bit in the interview, and he talked about Warren Buffett.
So the biggest news of all the last few weeks was that Warren Buffett, you know, one of America's richest men, he dumped all of his banking shares. So he dumped Goldman Sachs, Wells Fargo, all those guys, and he started buying gold.
So following what Warren Buffett's doing is not a bad idea at all. If you'd replicated what he'd done over the last 20, 30 years, you'd have done very well indeed. So now Buffett is buying gold and he's getting rid of all his banking stocks. So now he's worried about the banks, presumably worried about the economy in general, because gold is seen as a hedge against that. So we should all be very worried as well. But Rob, you've been digging into what Mr. Buffett's been doing in a bit more detail. It's not quite as straightforward as that.
So to put it in the simplest terms, it's just not true. So has Warren Buffett sold some of his banking stocks? Yes. Has he sold all of them? Far from it. So Warren Buffett has been selling banking stocks, but he's also been buying as well. He's increased his holding in Bank of America by an additional $2 billion. To put it into perspective, the gold position he took through a mining company was just over $500 million. So he's made lots of trades, but he bought more in Bank of America, four times more than he did in Barrick Gold. And two of his five biggest holdings are still in the banking sector. Bank of America is his second biggest holding. It makes just over 10% of the whole Berkshire Hathaway holding is in Bank of America. He also has a huge stake in American Express, the other one making up the top five. And of the banking shares he did drop, with most of them, he still holds a position in them. So does he have less faith in some of the banks? Clearly he does. Has he sold all of his shares? Not at all. And is gold now a major part of his portfolio? Far from it. So this is where I get a bit skeptical of his position of things here. He's very clever to use the association of Warren Buffett, anchored to that well-respected name, to then put across a view that turns out to be completely false, which then will scaremonger and create a lot of attention. It's going to grab headlines. The fact we're talking about it now shows that it's grabbing attention. So Rob, attention grabbing, great selling, maybe, but useful information, or actually the truth? Not really.
Yeah, completely agree with all of that. And he used that as a setup to talk about how he's been investing in gold for a long time. And he also talked about Bitcoin. I'm not clear on whether he personally invests in Bitcoin, but Bitcoin has been called digital gold. It shares a lot of characteristics in common. So Robert is into gold. Warren Buffett apparently is getting into gold. So Rob wanted to know if that's what he thought everyone else should be doing as well.
Is that what you think other people should be doing as well? Getting into gold and Bitcoin? Is there any other asset classes that you feel comfortable with at the moment?
That's a great question, Rob, because you're going to hear all these experts. And you know, I'm considered one of the experts. And I'm just an ordinary guy who's been watching this ripoff by the American banking system. Like, I don't invest in stocks. Everybody else does. And what I am is an entrepreneur. And when I saw the iPhone come out, I said, holy mackerel, that's the most powerful tool an entrepreneur could have. You know, today you could sit anywhere in the world and do business with an iPhone. But most people are looking for a job versus being an entrepreneur. So they're thinking like an employee, like my poor dad, and not like an entrepreneur, like my rich dad. So I'm an entrepreneur. I don't have a job. I employ hundreds of people. But I don't want a job, because if I have a job, I'll pay taxes.
Rob, I'm a bit confused. I'm sure I asked about asset classes, but unless the iPhone's an asset class, I don't think he actually answered the question there.
Yeah, I thought that was a dodgy edit the first time I listened to that, but that was actually the answer to the question, right?
Yeah. So let's address what he said, even though it wasn't an answer to the question. The iPhone is a super powerful tool. Can't deny that. It's a wonderful phone. I own one myself. Does it mean that you can all become entrepreneurs because there's an iPhone? No, I've got a football in my garden, but I'm not going to start playing for Liverpool next week just because I bought a ball. It's just not going to happen. There's a little bit more to it than that. And it's not to put people off from entrepreneurship. You're just going to need more than an iPhone. I don't know if you can add to that. There's not really much I could say. That was just all a bit bizarre.
A similarly bizarre line of argument in what he went on to say about gold.
And what I've been doing for years, saving gold and silver, because gold and silver are God's money. I'm not religious. I'm just saying God put the money here. It's been on planet Earth since Earth was formed. And then Bitcoin is people's money. And Bitcoin is counter to the US dollar. It's the exact opposite.
Again, like the iPhone point, I'm not sure that gold, having been around since the Earth was formed, is a compelling argument for it as an asset class.
Oh, now you tell me, Rob, I've gone long on mud.
Yeah, exactly. Dirt has been around for a long time. Water has been around from the beginning. Should we all be going around filling up bottles just to trade? I just don't follow the line of argument. There's a very good reason why gold is used as a store of value rather than something like water or leaves. It's because there is a cost in extracting it. You can consistently measure the quality. You can do lots of things with it. It hasn't just been decided on completely randomly. But the reason that gold has value now isn't because it's been around on the earth for millions of years. It's because for the last few thousand years, people have decided between themselves that it has value. And Bitcoin, as you mentioned in passing earlier, is a similar kind of thing. That only has value because for a very small number of years, people have agreed between themselves that it does. But again, it does have particular characteristics. These ones, not natural, but designed, that do give it the potential to be a very good store of value. So it's not that gold and Bitcoin are bad investments. Not at all. It's just the reasoning behind it that seems a little bit odd.
So throughout the interview, Robert talked about the banking collapse. So I wanted to ask him when it was going to happen. There was a lot happening in the world, but at the moment, the banking system hasn't collapsed. When do you think this is going to happen?
It's happening. That's what I'm saying to you. It already happened. You know, I mean, HSBC is in serious trouble because China is in trouble. Hong Kong's in trouble. And the whole thing started back in 1971 when Nixon took the dollar off the gold standard. And then the world could just print as much money as they wanted to.
This is quite interesting because I think, first of all, it's worth saying that the happening point, it's hard to agree with because, as we're seeing at the moment, asset prices are recovering and on the way up. So to say it's happening, there's no actual evidence out there in terms of data yet to show that. Now, could it happen? Yes. Will something happen in the future? Well, quite possibly. But one of the things he talks about as happening is China being in trouble. In the future, China will probably be the next world superpower. So to say China is in trouble is a bit confusing. But that's, you know, at a point of view, that's an opinion. That's his, we have ours. But we also have the opinion of someone who a lot of property podcast listeners hugely respect, and that's Ray Dalio. Now, we've talked a lot about Ray Dalio on the podcast, and rightly so, because the level of detail he goes into when putting an investment case together and the generosity he's given by sharing his knowledge and information is incredible. Now, a few months back, right in the height of the COVID crisis, we talked about his work and gave our views of what will play out in the future of the economy. And we promised to follow up by summarizing and breaking down the work of Ray Dalio. Now, if you've ever read the work of Ray Dalio, while it's very generous that he shares it, it's also quite heavy going. So we want to make it accessible for everyone. So we're going to break it down and just lay it out in our simple terms, which hopefully will be better for all of us to understand, including ourselves. We'll benefit from breaking it down and just talking it through. So Robert Kiyosaki talks about the banking collapse happening now and China struggling and the dollar devaluing. And you know what? Some of those things won't happen, but some of them could. And the dollar point in particular is something that Ray Dalio does talk about. So we will get to that next week. So while some of it we don't agree with, some of the sentiment of what he's saying, we feel that has some merit. And something else that we feel that has merit is the acknowledgement of there being a wealth gap currently, and that's been widening over time. And that's something that Ray Dalio also talks about. So while this interview, Rob, has raised a few eyebrows, including our own, there are points and nuggets within the interview that we mustn't ignore and must take forward and discuss next week.
Definitely. And it's a tricky one because if you're a fan of Robert Kiyosaki, as a lot of people are, a lot of people loved his books and have gone on to listen to him since then, it's very tempting to just take everything he says as gospel. And as hopefully we've illustrated, that might not be the best idea. Okay, we're asking you to listen to us rather than the extremely wealthy, best-selling author who sold millions of books, but hopefully some of our arguments made sense to you. But on the other side, because there's some fairly bizarre bits in there, it's tempting to then just throw the whole lot out. And that would be a mistake as well. Your takeaway from this definitely shouldn't be, oh, he's talking nonsense, everything in the world is totally fine and will be forever. That's not what we're saying. I agree with quite a bit of what he says is going to happen. I just disagree with the timing of it and the reasoning he's given for why that's going to happen. And while, like you say, Rob, Ray Dalio's work isn't the most accessible, when you take the time to really digest it, I find that a much easier line of argument to buy into and see how you logically reach the conclusions that he comes to. So I'm really looking forward to getting into that next week.
So it's time for Hub Extra. And Rob, I don't know if you've got a new love for animals, but what's here on the show sheet is camel, camel, camel. So are camel, are we running out of ideas? Are now we going through animals that we like? Or is there something more to this?
I did see some camels on my zoo visit that I missed the Robert Kiyosaki interview for. They're pretty cool. But no, this is different. Camel, camel, camel is actually a tool that helps you track prices on Amazon. So many of us now are at the point where we just buy everything off Amazon. So anything you're looking to buy, you'll go on Amazon, you'll find it there, and you'll assume that the price is pretty good. But prices on Amazon change all the time, and often by quite large amounts. And what Camel, camel, camel does, I'm just going to call it camel from now on, is it lets you put in a product that you're interested in, and then it will send you an email alert when the price drops. So it'll either send you an alert when the price drops at all, or you can set a price level at which you want to be alerted. And it'll also show you the entire price history of that item, so you can see if the price at the moment is historically high or low. So a few weeks ago, I wanted to buy a watch. So I went to Camel to look at the price and saw that actually it was on the high end of what it normally was. So I set an alert, waited a couple of weeks, got an email saying that the price had dropped by £30, and now it was almost the lowest it had ever been, so I decided to buy it then. So clearly it isn't worth doing for small purchases, but for larger ones where you're not in a particular rush, it's such an easy way of making sure you're getting a good deal, and it's completely free, so nothing to lose.
So that's us done for another week. But before we go, let us know what you think, and a lot of you have already. You might want to head over to the forum on the Property Hub website and leave your views on the original episode or what we've just gone through here. Let's all share our opinions because, let's face it, whether you like him, dislike him, or somewhere in between, Robert Kiyosaki gets you talking. So we thank Robert for that. And we genuinely are thankful that he came onto the show and shared his information and his points of view. I'm really looking forward to next week, though, when we get into Ray Dalio's stuff. And that's going to be an episode you absolutely want to listen to. So if you don't subscribe yet, make sure you do. Please do share the podcast and these episodes in particular if you've enjoyed them. And if you want more, then we're on all the socials as well. Property Hub UK. So we'll be back on Tuesday with Ask Rob and Rob, and back next Thursday with the Ray Dalio episode. Until then, take care, have fun, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.